Hey guys, Wes Goldberg of Locked On Heat here with my co-host David Ramil. Before we jump into this episode, we're going to do something that we rarely do, and that is to make a humble ask of you. We have a brand new Patreon page. You can find it by going to patreon.com/lockedonheat. And we're asking for people to commit but to pledging $1 a month to help us improve the quality of the show. So check it out. Please take a look. And if you're so inclined to help us out and improve your own listening experience, donate to our fund.
We put out so much free material. The podcast is free, and we spend a lot of time and effort trying to make it the best daily podcast we can for you, the listener. To do that, all we're asking for is 20 listeners to pledge about $1 a month. That would cover the overhead for the software that we're hoping to adopt and use.
By going to patreon.com/lockedonheat and becoming a patron, you will become an official Locked On Heat board member. David and I like to hear from you, and by creating this board, we will have a group of dedicated listeners to bounce ideas off of for the show. You'll have an opportunity to help influence the podcast and get to say cool things to your friends like, I'm on a board.
We're simply asking now that you show your support for what we're doing so that hopefully we can keep doing this for a very long time. First, we'll improve the audio quality, and from there, as we get more pledges, patrons, and of course board members, we'll use the money to further enhance the show and maybe feed the hosts here and there.
So please go check it out. Again, it's patreon.com/lockedonheat. That's patreon.com/lockedonheat.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the NBA at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
Today we're going to recap the Heat's win over the Jazz from last night. We're going to take some of your questions from Twitter and spotlight a few performances from the game. But David, I figured something out yesterday while watching the game against the Jazz, and it's something I think you've already known and you talked about in our power rankings, and I disputed it. But last night, I'm now finally fully coming around to the fact that Josh Richardson is Miami's best player. Not only did he make the game-winning layup, right, against the Jazz with just a couple seconds left, the Heat put him on Donovan Mitchell to close the game. We've seen that in the past where Spo relies on Richardson to defend the opponent's best player, best wing player at least, in the final minutes. And Spo has routinely gone, or more often I should say, gone to Richardson in crunch time lately. We've seen it a couple of times. He's being relied on both ends of the court now, and it's what he did on both ends that won the game for the Heat against the Jazz. I just want to go through the last minute and a half and how that played out. Right. Josh Richardson strips the ball and plays strong defense under the rim and then gets an assist from Tyler Johnson for a dunk. That brings the game to 197. Heat's still down, 197. Then Josh Richardson stripped the ball from Donovan Mitchell and got the Heat another possession. Now, this is the point of the game. This is the last minute and a half. And the Heat are down by five, I think, to start this whole series. The Heat can't let Utah score again, basically. And I remember even Eric and Tony during the broadcast saying, they need to stop every time they're down the floor. And Richardson strip, like, basically forces a turnover on those next two possessions. So he strips the ball from Donovan Mitchell and then got the Heat another possession. Then on the second to last possession, he denied Donovan Mitchell the ball. And it forced Rodney Hood to take a tough, deep three-pointer. And that, of course, missed. And then Richardson made the go-ahead layup on a play that Spo called for him. And then in the final seconds, he forced the inbound deep to Donovan Mitchell in the backcourt. So deep in the backcourt. And that didn't give Utah enough time to get off a quality shot. The Heat went on 8-2 run in the final minute and 18 seconds to win the game. And it's largely because of Richardson's play on both ends.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a fantastic piece from Cooper Moorhead over at Heat.com today about Josh Richardson's growth. And, you know, obviously there were some early season struggles, but he continued to do the work. And he's just living up to those kinds of expectations. You know, we made our New Year's resolutions a couple of weeks ago. The thing that I pointed out for Richardson was to become a household name. And it's performances like yesterday that I think are getting him along that way. Like, we've talked about his defense being phenomenal all season long. And it certainly has been. I mean, not just impacting passing lanes, but using his length to harass opponents, getting block shots at the rim, doing all the things that you could possibly do to make, you know, impacts on defense when his shot wasn't falling. now over the last month and a half, I think we've seen his offense start to come around to those levels. And he's garnering, I think, serious consideration for, you know, a most improved player award, something along those lines. He's just been, not just has he been a great player for Miami, he's been the team's best player, as you pointed out, and one of the guys around the league that you have to look to being a threat every night on both sides of the ball. And that's what makes him so uniquely dangerous and effective, is that he can make an impact on both sides. Now, one of the things that Moorhead included in his piece was how he talked about Richardson embracing the idea that he didn't think that he was going to get that final play called for, but when Spoelstra drew it up, he was like, all right, let's do this. Let's go. And you know, as you and I have talked about on a number of occasions, it's that increasing confidence that's just manifesting itself more and more and more. Like, for every shot he hits in the mid-range, for every shot he takes in the clutch minutes of a closing game, that just helps propel him to that next level at each defensive stop, et cetera. It just keeps building and growing towards something, and hopefully it's going to be the continued growth of Richardson to where he gets to that point where he's a star-level player. Like, I mean, we don't know what his ceiling is because this is the best he's ever played, and it seems like he's capable of doing even more on a more consistent basis. From here, I think the next step is everybody kind of taking a step back and saying, you know what? Josh is our best player. Let's let him work. Feed him the ball as possible and have him go to the rim, have him take shots, have him control the tempo of a game. He's at that point where I think that's the next step.
I mean, Spo, like you said, he's calling plays for Josh Richardson. That game-winning layup was a wrinkle on a play that they have called for Josh Richardson for most of the season, where Olynyk sets the high screen at the top of the key and Richardson curls around him. But in this game, Richardson curled around him, and then usually on that first curl, they'll lob it or find him on the cut, depending on the timing of it. But he faked the inside curl and then came back out, grabbed the ball, went right back around that Olynyk screen, and just handled the ball all the way from the top of the key for the layup. I mean, that is a wrinkle on a play that they've been calling for him all season long, and that's the sort of thing that you do for one of your best players, right? You start calling plays for that player, as Spo has done this season, and then you start building on those with wrinkles and things like that, and you allow him to freelance. I mean, defensively, what you said before, he's not only is he just playing good on-ball defense as he always has, he's creating turnovers, and that's creating offensive opportunities for him and his teammates. I mean, he's learning to freelance a lot more than what he's been doing in his career. He's always been a phenomenal on-ball defender, right? Like, that length, he's hard to get around. But he's starting to freelance more. And there was one play with about 5 minutes left. Ricky Rubio is kind of like messing around in the paint. He's trying to, you know, prod and get to his spot. And he finally gets an open shot. He gets his shot. And Richardson gets off of his guy, who is kind of coming around the top of the arc, goes off of his guy and then swats Rubio's shot from behind and blocks it. I mean, that's the sort of freelancing that in the wrong hands could end up as an open three for somebody else had Rubio like noticed Richardson was there. But Richardson has such a good feel, I think, for the game, and especially defensively for the game, that was the right time. That was the right time to just kind of go off and freelance on your own and make a play like that. That's the sort of thing that star players do. And you mentioned household name, star player. I think a lot of if you're not somebody who's watching the Heat, if you're not a Heat fan, you're listening to this podcast, you're probably rolling your eyes at us right now and saying we're overreacting. We don't know what Josh Richardson's ceiling is. We didn't think he could be this good,
right,
as a second round pick coming out of Tennessee. I'm with you 100%. He could be an all-star level player. I have no reason to doubt that. Like, who are we to say that he can't? And the way he's playing right now, if he does this consistently, and that's the difference. He's done this for games and here and there. He's doing it for the last 10 or 13 games now. He's doing it consistently. He's been Miami's best player for the last 10 games, period. End of story. And if he could do this, he is playing at an all-star level. He's not going to make the all-star game this year. Not happening.
Right.
But if he plays like this, that is an all-star level rate of play that he has. That was my main takeaway from the Jazz game, was just how good Josh Richardson looks. He is getting better. And if he continues at this pace, he is going to be Miami's best player by the end of the season, if he's not already. And I think he is already. So, we'll get to some of your – oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to add to it a little bit, say as far as what great player is concerned, now maybe from what we've seen of Richardson so far, that might seem hyperbolic that we're putting him on that kind of plateau. Or the reality is that right now – Hassan Whiteside's probably the team's best player, and that he can possibly be the most dominant on a night-to-night basis. But again, that's not always the case with a guy like Whiteside. Sure, he can make a huge impact defensively. Sure, he can have a big night offensively, but he doesn't always go and have those kind of big, you know, big nights where you see that level of production and go, oh, yes, he's clearly the team's best player. Goran might still be able to do it, you know, although he's not exactly wired as the team's point guard, as kind of a guy more willing to take a step back sometimes. I just don't think he has that kind of drive to be the team's most productive player. So right now, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be Richardson. Like, I think, again, we're going to keep seeing more confidence from him, more willingness. And I think as long as he keeps doing this on a semi-regular basis, I think other teammates, you know, particularly with Deion Waiters out of the lineup, I think we're going to see every other guys on that lineup kind of say, you know what, feed Josh. Let's see where he can take us. Let's see where he can go, because he's showing at this young age that he could possibly be the leader of this team. And that's something that we're seeing for the first time. We did not expect this role, as you pointed out. Yeah. So I'm curious to see where it ends up, but I'm confident it's going to be pretty good.
We're not just saying this either. I mean, the Spo's coaching decisions backs up what we're saying here. Richardson, I'm sure you've noticed, has been handling the ball even more than he has been. He is Miami's backup point guard, period. And he even handles the ball when Goran Dragic is in there sometimes. And defensively, he's getting the top assignment every single night and in crunch time. Like, it's not for the full game, but if push comes to shove, they're putting Richardson on somebody. They put Richardson on Donovan Mitchell. That's what they're doing, you know? Spo's coaching decisions backs it up. He is trusting Josh Richardson. That's the key here. We'll get to some of your Twitter questions next. But first, Locked On Heat still has inventory for sponsorships this season. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. Know that podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers. So if you're unhappy with your traditional advertising online or in print, podcasting might be a way for you to go. Locked On Heat listeners are generally male, about 96% in between the ages of 18 and 45. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and money. For more information on rates and next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. We're going to get to our spotlight players later on, but let's go to Twitter and check out some of the comments you sent using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Taylor tweets in, "There's no way Hassan Whiteside is on the team after February 8th. He includes a video of Whiteside standing emotionless as Richardson hits that go-ahead layup in the final seconds." This is something that has been circulating on Twitter for a while, is this idea that if Hassan Whiteside's not going to be in at the end of games, and he hasn't been, and rightfully so, you know, this team has been better going small, so to speak, with Olynyk at center at the end of games. You can't pay somebody $20-plus million a year to not be in there at the end of games. And what Whiteside brings to the table from a rim protection and a rebounding standpoint is very valuable. But it might not be so valuable as to pay him $23 million a year. So the idea that there has been a lot of trade talk around Whiteside, the beat reporters are reporting on it. Like, this is a thing now, David. Like, if he's not going to play at end of games, the Heat have to put him on the block. I'm not saying they're going to find a trade, but they have at least they need to at least put him on the block and clear that money to start making some cap space room. Because if you trade Whiteside, that is a huge chunk of cap of room that you can clear, and it's not going to create a ton of cap space.
Right.
It creates virtually none by the time you sign everybody else that you need to sign. But it is the first move that it would take to get to cap space. I mean, it would be a big move for them to do that.
You know, this might seem a little unexpected, but I kind of disagree, to be honest with you. I think, you know, as much as we've talked about it over the past, I'm actually enjoying this version of Hassan Whiteside more than I have in a long time. Like, this is what we've talked about, what I have specifically said a number of occasions, that for Whiteside to be most effective on this roster, he needs to have a diminished role. Like, putting him out there and having him control the game and take too many shots is extremely problematic, because it slows the offense down and makes everybody else kind of wait and watch and see what he does, more often than not putting up a contested shot that doesn't fall. And I don't think that's what we've seen over the last few games. And so to me, I think one, the video, to address that, is overstating, you know, something. It's fitting into the narrative that we have, you know, in some way contributed to, as well, as far as Whiteside's attitude problem. I think the reality is that he was watching that and going, you know what, we've got 3 seconds left, or however much time was left on the clock. We don't know what they can do in that time. Well, how much time was left when Richardson?
If Utah had like 0.5, like three. There was enough time to get a shot off, and I think Josh Richardson, even after, you know, Tyler Johnson and Wayne Ellington are celebrating, and Josh Richardson, after hitting the game-winning layup,
yeah, he's like, stay calm. It's not over yet.
Staying calm. Yeah. Had Udonis Haslam been doing what Whiteside was? I can't believe we're both defending Whiteside here. How did this happen?
Yeah, because it's we never railed against Whiteside because we disliked him. We were just delivering our version of the truth and our perception and what we
saw. If anything, I think I love Whiteside. He is a great personality. I love having him on the team. The idea of not having him on the team is sad to me because I think he gets along with everybody in that locker room. Like, I really do. I feel like he's
a good. I disagree with that. I actually do.
Well, I think he's a fun presence.
Sure. That's fine. Look,
I'm on Snapchat too much is what I'm saying. But the thing is, like, had Haslam just been like, I don't know what Haslam was doing because I didn't watch it. That wasn't really pointed out. I can go back and watch. But had he just been like calm, like Whiteside was on the sideline there, I think we'd been like, Haslam's being mature.
Right.
He knows that there's 3 seconds left. You know, it's the way the narrative kind of frames your the way you interpret what you're looking at. And just by the way, I just want to say, like, Whiteside for like a split second being emotionless after a go ahead layup. That means zilch. That doesn't mean anything. And I just, like, that's how I would have been on the sideline, for example. Like, I would have been nervous. Like, and that's how I am when I'm nervous. Like, Whiteside might have just been nervous about this game because the Heat they still had one possession left, the Jazz did. So, just in that respect, I don't want to put too much into that video, but just the idea that, David, you're saying, like, this is the role he should be playing. I agree with that 100%. Like, Whiteside in this role is very effective. And no doubt in this role increases Miami's ceiling because Olynyk is playing more and he is by far Miami's best front court player right now and not Whiteside. And that's okay. And if Whiteside is playing this role, that's a good role for him to play. I just don't know that you could pay him this much money. It's an opportunity cost. And that's the problem. But at the same time, if you're going to trade him, and I've said this before, you know, this comment from Taylor comes in as February 8th, unless I think you put him on the block, but I don't think you're actively shopping him. I just think, you know, there's a difference between he's available at the right price if somebody calls you and finding an opportunistic trade that way and then actively trying to get him off the team. Because right now, the Heat are best with Whiteside on the team. And as long as he's accepting of that role, and it seems like he was. I mean, I don't know if you looked at him on Instagram afterwards, but he was tweeting a bunch of like mood memes afterwards, basically saying how happy he was after that game. And that, I don't know if that was just trying to compensate for what he looked like. I don't know if he saw that video or whatever, if there's been criticism of him, but he seems happy that this team is winning. And I think he would be as long as long-term he's accepting of this role and not being in at the end of games. Cause most teams in the NBA go small at the end of games, period. I don't care who your center is. Just not most teams don't pay their centers $23 million a year. That's the difference. Yeah. But
I think that's, the salary is the big concern there. And, you know, I'd love for him to stay in this diminished role if he's happy and comfortable with it. Although I'd prefer that coming in at, say, 15 to 18 million per as opposed to 23 million per.
I think you can find what he does on a consistent basis. You can't find his ceiling, but you can find what he does on a night-to-night basis with about 8 to 10 million a year.
Probably fair.
Maybe. Yeah. You could probably go get a veteran. Like, you could, if the Heat just replaced him with Zaza Pachulia, like the Warriors had.
I don't know about all that. That's,
I mean, Zaza's not nearly as good, but what I'm saying is that opens up more room for James Johnson and O'Kelly Olynyk. Sure. And if you just need a guy to come in, you know, you can go get Marcin Gortat at $12 million a year or Robin Lopez at $13
million. But nobody wants Hassan Whiteside. We're not going to be able to trade him. At this point, look, as much as I'd love for it to have happened 2 months ago or a month ago, maybe even 2 weeks ago, before we saw this kind of rebirth of Whiteside's less dominant role, yeah, I would have been 100% supporting a trade for him, but I just don't see it happening. Like we're talking about around the league, a piece by Adrian Wojnarowski over at ESPN saying that the market has cooled so considerably. You know, talking about DeAndre Jordan, who's a far more established, proven commodity than Hassan Whiteside is, and you know, he made the comparison to what Denver was able to do a couple of seasons ago, trading Timothy Mozgov for 2 first-round picks. That's not going to happen. Like, they're not, right, we're not going to get anywhere near that kind of return for a guy like Whiteside. So
I think the only way, I don't think it happens this season. Whiteside's on the team for the rest of the season, barring anything crazy, like unless Phoenix comes out of left field and they're like, we need Whiteside right now, or like whoever. But I think the move maybe is in the offseason when some teams miss in free agency. But even then, it's too late for Miami. So I don't know. I don't know. But all I know is that you can't I don't think you get long term. I think this season you can do it. Long term, I don't think you could play Whiteside like this and pay him what he's getting paid.
Maybe.
You've got to find a solution for that. But easier said than done. All right, let's quickly do this last one. Chris writes in, I've seen plenty of people saying that Deion Waiters has no place on this team since he's been out, but I think he could absolutely fill a key role if he's healthy. I'll be the first to admit that he has been disappointing. However, now that his role will be reduced, if he is able to get healthy, I think he would be a nice complement to what the Heat are doing at the moment.
Sure.
The key part of that is if Waiters is willing to accept it, and that's kind of the same thing as Whiteside.
Basically,
they're willing to accept a lesser role. That it makes sense. I love the way Goran Dragic is just playing without Deion Waiters. I love that Josh Richardson is a secondary ball handler without Deion Waiters. Richardson and Dragic have, and you can't dispute this. I mean, their numbers are better without Waiters. Like, they have taken advantage of Waiters being out, and they are better without Waiters. And I think they are so much better that without Waiters that it's not worth having Waiters in there next to him. Now, I think Waiters has a spot coming off the bench as like a Lou Williams type, just like a microwave scorer. And if he gets hot, you keep playing him. And if not, you know, he could almost be like the second Wayne Ellington, you know, like a different flavor of Wayne Ellington. Like, you know how if Wayne Ellington's hot, Spo will just play him till the end of the game. You could do the same thing with Waiters. That's where I think he fits in. But the question is if he would accept that.
Now, the best thing going for this roster as it's currently constituted is that almost everybody on this team has already gotten paid. Like, they've gotten their fat contracts already. So there's no threat of the disease of Moore infecting everybody in that lineup, knowing that for the most part, look, Goran Dragic has gotten paid. Tyler's gotten paid. Josh Richardson has his extension coming. James Johnson got paid. Hassan got paid. Olynyk got paid. Like, Olynyk is probably playing for his next deal in a couple of seasons, and that's fine. We don't know what his ceiling will be at the end of this current contract. But with the exception of Wayne Ellington, everybody's gone paid. So maybe Deion can be that guy. Now, it seems to go completely against the personality as we come to understand it, Waiters' personality in particular, that he's going to be able to take that back seat, because when he's cooking, or when he wants to cook, that's when he's at his best, is when he's just taking it in there. Look, he does create shots for others. He does create opportunities for others offensively, but he also likes having the ball in his hands and having control over it. And maybe that kind of, you know, that impacts the current style of this team negatively. So I'm curious to see whether or not he's willing to take it back a notch, take it down a notch rather. So if he's willing to accept that lesser role, absolutely there's a place for him on the team. But that's a mighty big if when it comes to somebody like Deion.
Dave and I have our spotlight players up next. But first, quick reminder to make sure that you are subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast, and leave us a review on iTunes to help other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. It's the NFL playoffs, guys. This is the time. Plus, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, if you're into that. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, it's time for our spotlight players. David, I know we've already talked a little bit about yours.
Hassan Whiteside. Listen, I was really impressed, and I know for some of our longer-term listeners that'll probably be shocking to hear, but I think this was the most controlled version of him that we've seen in a great long time, and he was extremely impressive to me. Again, his overall stat line, not gaudy, and that's great. In 26 minutes, he scored 14 points on 5 of 11 shooting, shot 4 of 4 on free throws, finished with 10 rebounds, had an assist and 4 blocks. I mean, that's a great game. That's the kind of game that we looked at last year from James Johnson and said, who would have thought James Johnson could put up these kinds of numbers? Let's sign him to a long-term deal. Now Whiteside puts him up, and we're talking about trading him. You know, I saw from Whiteside not just the key blocks in the first quarter of the game that really helped Miami establish a defensive tempo and presence that they wanted to maintain throughout the rest of the game as well. You know, he took advantage of the smaller Derek Favors. Look, Rudy Gobert is out, but with Favors in the lineup, Whiteside seemed like he was understanding his role. Like, this is a guy that, despite Favors' overall heft, I can dominate over, because, you know, Favors is a very groundbound type player. So he took his shots in control. He gathered himself, didn't rush everything. And there was one play in particular that didn't wind up in an assist, but he was double teamed, saw it, and kicked the ball out to Goran Dragic for a wide open three that unfortunately Dragic missed. But that was a great pass. I nearly fell off the damn couch watching that. I started yelling. Everybody in the neighborhood thought I was insane. But yes, Whiteside passing out of a double team to a wide open Dragic for three. That's impressive. Look, he showed on defense.
Dragic gave him a little dap on the way off the court. I think there was a timeout immediately after that, yeah, or whatever, like immediate TV timeout. Dragic gave him dap afterwards too. That was, he was like recognizing, like, keep doing that, I'll make it next time. Almost,
I did not see that, so I'm glad you brought it up. But look, he showed defensively. He just had his presence there. He still finished 5 of 11, but I think most of those shots didn't fall for one reason or another, not because they were bad shots. He seemed in control. And if we assume what you saw on Instagram or Snapchat was correct, that he's actually feeling good about these kinds of victories, then I'm all for it. I don't care if he doesn't put up 25 points and 18 rebounds. I'd rather him be in control and effective and efficient.
Yeah, 14 points, 10 rebounds, like you said. Three of those four blocks came in like the first 4 minutes or something crazy. Like, it was two of them against Donovan Mitchell, just kind of like really setting the tone early, which is what you want. If the Heat are going to close games going small and they're going to set a pace and a tone to end games, that's Whiteside's time to shine, is at the start of games to set a tone then. And be like, no, you're not going to get into the paint. As badly as you want Donovan Mitchell, you know, superstar rookie that is getting to the paint against almost every team in the NBA, you're not going to do it against me. Mitchell went for that little underhand scoop layup, and Whiteside just swatted it. And Whiteside didn't even celebrate after, because he's just like, that's what I do.
Now, yeah,
you don't do that against me.
Tony Fiorentino pointed out that normally he keeps the ball in bounds, and maybe it was a little too enthusiastic. Even me, I wasn't reading into it and saying that it was a bad play. I think he just, his momentum kind of carried it over. I didn't know what else he
could. That would have been nearly impossible to keep that ball in bounds, too. I mean,
it was like right along the baseline, so it made no sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
he's shown that talent and ability to do that in the past. But yeah, I mean, you're right. That's a good point. Like, just set the tone, man. That's what we're doing. 26 minutes in the game is pretty high for him recently, too. Mm-hmm. And so that shows also, like, you can read a lot into the way Spo plays his guys. And what he does with them on the court, and he really allowed Whiteside to do those things. And 14 points, 10 rebounds, I love that. Yeah. Coupled with an assist, blocks, like in 26 minutes, 5 of 11 shooting. I mean, I know you've already went through those stats, but it's just to reiterate, he didn't score. He didn't get a triple-double with blocks. You know what I mean? He didn't score 28 points, but he was super effective in his role. I mean, in the box score doesn't reflect it because he was a minus 5, but that's because Utah went on that run there when he was in. And then I think he slowed down, and maybe he's still just getting back into playing shape. He did struggle a little bit later in the game, but overall, I thought he did a good job setting the tone. And if we can get more of that, and I like the word you used, controlled. It was a really controlled game from Whiteside, and I liked it. My spotlight player is Tyler Johnson. 16 points on 7 of 13 shooting. He had 2 assists. He had a couple of rebounds. He didn't turn the ball over. He played 34 minutes, and he was a team high plus 9 in plus minus. And, of course, he was starting for Deion Waiters, who continues to be out with that ankle situation. And I kind of want to take this opportunity on a game where the Heat won this game as a team, right? Like, 6 guys scored in double digits for them. I mean, the highest scorer was Goran Dragic and Tyler Johnson. Each of them had 16 points, you know, so it was everybody kind of contributing. But I kind of want to take this opportunity and spotlight Tyler Johnson and just how he's been playing in Deion's spot as a starter. I mean, this is a guy who has basically made a living, literally has made all of his money coming off the bench. And he has thrived in that role. And he is playing really well and almost just like seamlessly fitting in with the starting unit. He's not Josh Richardson. He's not coming out and having these big ooh-ah plays and getting things called for him at the end of games and guarding the team's best player. But for the most of the game, he guards, you know, he's guarding the opposing starters, which is different than what he's even been doing for most of his career. So that's an upgrade in role for him. And he's just not been an issue. Like, a lot of times you see guys who thrive on the bench get starting jobs and spot starting jobs, and they struggle a little bit. He hasn't. He's been able to be in there and seamlessly fit in. And just the way he plays reminds me a lot of Avery Bradley. It's just, he's going to be open for threes. He's going to be a really dogged defender. Like, he doesn't have the greatest size. He doesn't have the most length. But he's not going to give you anything. Like, he's not going to give you an inch defensively if it's in his power, right? He is going to play hard defensively. He's going to shoot open threes. He can handle the ball pretty well. He'll even run you a pick and roll every once in a while. He reminds me a lot of Avery Bradley, which would make Eric Reed really happy because Avery Bradley is his favorite player. But I just love the way he's playing. He just fits in so well next to Dragic. He fits in better than I thought it would, and it's cleared out some backup point guard spots for Josh Richardson to kind of take that responsibility on when Dragic gets his rest. I love the way Tyler Johnson's been playing.
Yeah, I agree. I think in contrast to what we were talking about with Deion earlier, it's a guy who's embraced his role, whether it's a lot of minutes off the bench, a lot of minutes as a starter, not as many minutes. I think you go in there knowing that your role is going to be up for grabs. It's not necessarily a set number of minutes or anything like that. You don't know what you're going to do on a night-to-night basis, and you kind of just make the most of your opportunities when you have them. And I think Tyler's certainly done that, whether when it's a game when he doesn't have to score as much, he makes an impact defensively and vice versa. And so, you know, maybe that's Miami's strength, is having 9, 10, 11 guys on a roster that can come in there and provide 11 to 15 minutes of strong play and balanced play. Yeah. I mean, you look at the stat sheet here, you had all these guys playing and scoring in double digits, nobody over 20 points, just a really solid production from everybody across the board. And most importantly, a win. That's what you want out of this team. So again, for a lot of people talking about we don't have a star player, that's absolutely the case. But maybe it's not necessarily a superstar, but maybe it's just really, really, really competent players at every position chipping in and working together cohesively as a unit. You don't know what their ceiling might be, but for now they're playing pretty good basketball.
They're right up there. They're basically one of the top five teams in the Eastern Conference. Everybody's like a game or a half game within each other. So they're right up there. They've done a really good job. They're 22-17 right now. The Heat look good right now. And yeah, I mean, look, and just one other thing about Tyler Johnson, he did get hit in the face once.
He did.
Yeah.
Pretty badly. Actually,
did not lose a tooth. But he was bleeding from his mouth for like two plays.
Yeah, Tony Fiorentino pointing out twice that he spit blood onto the court. That was great. That was a great visual there.
That's a Tyler we love. Avery Bradley wouldn't do that. Avery Bradley would go to the locker room. Just kidding. I have nothing against Avery Bradley. The Heat play the Raptors Tuesday night. That's going to be a good test for this Heat team. That is now 22-17. But we'll be back tomorrow with a preview of that. For now, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. You could send email questions or mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.